Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, which you can now find on Spotify. I'm AD Packham and we are sartorially advised by OldFootballShirts.com. Well, just when you thought the window was shut, the pesky thing springs a leak. I think we're all surprised to see Florin Andoni being allowed to follow Jurgen Locadia out the exit door to join Galatasaray for the season, which leaves us, well, a bit like my hair, a bit thin up top. We also saw another five of our most promising youngsters head out on loan. Also, last week, we lost at Champions Man City, but our performance was a lot better than the scoreline and the highlights and match of the day suggested. The international break has left us with a blank weekend for the men's side, but Hope Powell's women's team kick off their league campaign at Bristol City today. Joining me, of course, is Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the author of the Brighton But Only at Home blog, Jason Thackeray, and we'll also hear from the Albion Women's Assistant Manager, Amy Merricks. Welcome back, Jason. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks, Eddie.
How's life in blogdom?
the blog's kind of on hold a little bit, shall we say. I've not had time to do it for a while.
All right, has it been prorogued for the time being?
It's prorogued, yeah.
It's Brighton, but only
when you feel like it.
Only feel like it,
Away from only away from my computer.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
So we haven't really spoken to you since the new broom came in. What's your sort of like overall impressions in the first few games of Potter Ball?
I'm quite excited about Potter Ball. I genuinely love the new formation. It's exciting. We're going to see a lot more goals. I think the only caveat to that is we're going to see a lot more goals in our net as well as us scoring them. But great to see. I think Dan Byrne particularly has benefited from Potter Ball. I've loved his performances. And I think we've got a decent signing in Trossard as well.
Do you think that actually with Dan Byrne, the way he started, and we did see it for a short while against Southampton after we went down to 10 men, that possibly Dan Byrne could have actually been brought in as an orthodox left back, even though he's about 100 feet tall.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Dan Byrne is I said this to my mate Steve the first time we saw him.
Not Steve.
The second that he first started playing football, I imagine the coach took one look at him and went, "You're going at centre back, son."
Or centre forward, yeah. And that was
There's no other position for you. Yeah, that's where you play.
It comes from the Peter Crouch Fall of School of Football, really, doesn't it?
No, this bloke's talented.
Crouchy
is good at stretching his leg like Inspector Gadget, and that's about it, and doing his silly robot thing.
Crouchy does overhead kicks, and he's got a brilliant podcast, so I will defend
him. Well, fair enough, but you wait till Crouchy to the end. Byrne will be able to do that soon, believe me.
Everyone thinks Crouchy, just because it's this great big lanky beanpole thing, it's like that he can't play football, but he scored some spectacular goals in his time, and he's been, you know.
But Byrne had one particular moment against City where he had a takedown that Bruno would have been proud of that's been turned into a gif already.
Well, I was going to say Aguero was proud of it and gave him a high five for it.
The most amazing thing about that was it was actually posted by the Man City page, by the Man City website.
So was that condescending, do you think, or was it just genuinely impressed?
No, they were just.
Are we going to lose him to City at the end of the season?
Yeah, and everyone else probably.
So you reckon that you're talking to your mate Steve and...
And the thing that I said to him was the second we saw Dan Byrne is he's been a centre back since the second he started playing. So, yes, he plays football like a left-back in that left centre-back position, but he is a centre-back.
We saw him playing in the Cup last year, didn't we? And he looked very much at home, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Well, this is what I was going to say. I mean, just to play devil's advocate for a second, and we are going to talk about the Man City game in a second, but largely the teams that have been selected by Potter so far, with the exception of probably Trossard, it's been largely the personnel that was available to Chris Hughton. So, and we've been saying for a long time, for the last couple of years, that with the personnel that we've got available to us and available to Chris last year, that playing with the three at the back was probably the best formation
for us. How many more times do we have to say this? We didn't have the personnel to play three at the back because they didn't exist. We didn't have enough centre-backs.
And I don't think it suits Duffy, and I think that's another thing to come out of the City game.
Apart from that, perfect analysis.
Yeah, nice little segue there into the
team
game.
News, yeah.
And the headline news was that Shane Duffy was relegated to the bench for this game with Adam Webster coming in for his full debut. There was also a first league start of the season for Bernardo, with Solly March pushed forward to take the place of the suspended Florin Andoni.
Do you think Potter's been listening to us then? Because because the previous 2 weeks shows have said Duffy is very much the sort of the wobbly person who's most likely to give way. Or is it the fact that Webster is that good that it was only sort of going to be a matter of time before he was blooded into the first team anyway?
Jason?
I've not seen Webster play yet, so...
Right.
I've seen him play for Bristol City, but he didn't particularly stand out. But right. I've not seen him play for us.
What we'll see with Potter, I think, is horses for courses.
I think that's right.
I mean, obviously, all the best made plans went completely out the window after a minute when they went 1-0 up. But it was the way that Webster played at Bristol Rovers was
him. City.
No, at Bristol Rovers
as well.
Midweek.
Oh, I see.
And I think he saw enough of him to see that he's quicker on the ground.
Do you think his passing is better?
Because
that's the main criticism of Duffy, isn't it? And I don't think that necessarily holds water, because you know that Lewis Dunk can ping a 60-yarder, absolutely, and Duffy's been trying to emulate that. But if he didn't have Dunk to compare against, I don't think Duffy's passing is that bad.
No, I think Shane Duffy's fantastic.
Yeah, I think his passing is a little... dubious under pressure, and I think we're going to get pressed playing out from the back. I think that's the issue with Duffy.
Sure.
But I agree with AD that it's going to be horses for courses. I think we'll see him come back against Burnley.
And
there's one team in the league that you want an old-fashioned stopper playing for you,
there will be times this season where I'm sure we're going to be playing like 4-4-2 or a version of that.
Well, we played with the flat back 4 for a while against Southampton. Mm. Whoever it was, I think it was Solly March came off and someone else in a totally different position came on. And we played with far more offence. And Dan Byrne effectively played left back.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And didn't look out of place there. Even though you think, hang on, what's someone who's 18 feet tall? I know he was 100 feet tall just now. 18 feet tall playing at left back, because left backs, by and large, are about 4'3".
Okay, I mean the question going into this game, and obviously hindsight's a glorious thing, coming back looking at a 4-0 defeat. But I mean, Watford beat them 6-0 in the FA Cup final. They got beat Watford 6-0 in the FA Cup final. So it's, you know,
what's your point? Sorry,
the problem with playing like a team like Man City is if you create chances against them, you have to take them. Otherwise, you're going to be out of the game.
It's something to be said. I mean, if we'd have stuck a couple away, then a 4-2 defeat at Man City, that actually looks quite positive.
I'm going to controversially say that 4-0 away at City is probably about par.
Yes.
I imagine they will beat teams by more than that at home this season.
They created an awful lot of chances, actually, in this game. Well, if you watch, I watched two games on Saturday. I watched Man City v Brighton. And then I watched Man City v Brighton on Match of the Day. Completely different game.
Editing. I mean, I can make you sound good on the Albion Raw when I'm editing, so, you know.
That's why we never edit the show.
You say that. but, yeah, it's. I think there is we know there's an agenda on Match of the Day. There is probably across, you know, it's making the big boys look good. You know, let's go back to, since we've been in the Premier League, let's go back to Lukaku kicking Gaetan Bong in the holiday money. Let's look at VAR things that have gone against us. Let's look at all these various things that don't get sort of seen and looked at. And Hemed getting a retrospective ban.
Kangaroo court, yeah.
Yeah, quiet. On the back of something Sky said or something BBC said. So I'm convinced there's not an agenda necessarily, but the oversight of people looking at what's going on not consistent across the...
There is a top six bias. We all know that.
We've got that in the referees as well. Look at the FA Cup semi-final. Kyle Walker should have been sent off for his head being in an unnatural position straight through the middle of Jack and Batch's face. You know, that's a red card all day long. And yet... You know, so there is... Sorry, I'm ranting here, Jason. Do feel free to actually sort of wildly agree and applaud.
I'm wildly agreeing and inwardly applauding. There is a top six bias. I think it shows... I was one of the things I was hoping from VAR would be that maybe that would get ironed out, but VAR has been enormously frustrating.
Weren't going to talk about that on this show anymore.
It does feel like a good time to plug another show I'm involved with, which is actually called Stairway to Seventh, which is basically you don't even mention the top six sides even when you're playing them. It's great.
So who did we play last week? Yeah, exactly.
Pets so. Blues, I think I called them.
All right.
But it was
it's wearying that you have, like, say, the other 14, the Stairway to Seventh, as they sort of humorously call it, And yeah, we always know. I mean, Chris, what was it? Kevin Friend of Liverpool. What was the game last season? I think it was. It was Spurs against Southampton. And the Spurs fans, not the Southampton fans, Spurs fans were singing when Kevin Friend was just absolutely giving them absolutely everything. He's one of our own. Kevin Friend, he's one of our own. And if they can see it, and let's face it, Spurs fans are not particularly known for their humour. If they can see it, then, you know, there's clearly something going on. When we had him playing against...
Are you suggesting that Spurs fans could actually be heard?
Eventually.
Blimey.
It was because Southampton fans couldn't be. When we played Liverpool, I mean, that was beyond parody, that performance that Kevin Friend put in. Okay. So you have the referees, you have, you know, there is clearly a consideration amongst those who are running the game, who are sponsoring the game, that the biggest names get the biggest slice of the pie, and that includes best referees.
Okay. I mean, we're not going to like dissect the game as much as we normally do on this one, but I mean, I just want a moment of appreciation for the way that City play football and a moment of killing Man City for the way they play football.
What do you mean?
Basically, I mean, with Kevin De Bruyne, wow. I mean, just
yeah,
wow.
I know.
And I mean, he just and Sterling. I mean, that is a magnificent team they've got there. But those pernickety, horrible little petty little fouls which they give away just stop any momentum, and no one gets booked for it. It's just always like on the halfway line and just conceding a cheap foul. They do it all the time, and it's just so annoying. I mean, Pep's done it there. He's done it at Barcelona. He's done it at Bayern. It's
an open secret as well, and Nobody seems to crack down on it. We're back to the referees again. Yeah. I mean, you've got to start giving yellow cards for that sort of thing.
Yeah. So yeah, it's. But that's about game management. You know, it's following the letter of the law, but certainly not the spirit of the law. Yeah. And let's face it, the spirit of the law is something that clearly Mike Dean is drinking on a regular basis.
But I mean, Jason, just with your football supporters' eyes in, you can't help but appreciate some of the movement and the way they play football.
No, absolutely. City play fantastic football at times. I mean, it's just football that I've almost never seen in England before, and Pep's got them doing that. You know, the one touch, the passing, the movement, mm-hmm. the finishing, everything is absolutely on point, and they've got a good defence as well. Mm. And they're slightly lucky.
Yes. I think also what you've got is that I think that Graham Potter has the potential, not necessarily to emulate Pep Guardiola, but when you see him setting up, and he can match, never mind the scoreline, but he can match on a certain level Guardiola's kind of tactical consideration. If you look at the possession stats, no one has 46% against Man City these days. You're lucky to get into the high 20s. With the right... I mean, one of the reasons that Guardiola can work and make it work is because he's always at the bigger club where he has the bigger budget and therefore the better players. If Graham Potter... Oh, well, you could say that about any manager, but I genuinely believe that if Graham Potter is continuing on the arc that he's on, there will become a time within the next 10 years where he could actually get... If he got the opportunity of playing with the bigger, better players, he could be something quite special too. I mean, we've only got this in the first half dozen games, but dear God, have we seen something pretty exciting.
I'm going to be slightly controversial here again because I know there's a lot of people that follow Brighton that's still, you know, slightly annoyed about Houghton going. But I think the difference between Houghton and Potter for me is Houghton looked like he was treating Brighton as a job for life, and I don't think a bigger side would have come in for him. I can see Potter stepping up to a so-called bigger side later in his career.
With us?
Either with us or... Yeah. A bigger side than us.
I mean, what I mean is, can he make us a bigger club?
Yes, I mean, Chris
is what, 65?
Not that, he's not that old. He's just turned 60.
And Potter's what, 40? 42. He's younger than me.
He's younger than me, which is disappointing. He's younger than me, yeah. His first Brighton manager that's been younger than me.
Oh, God.
Is that really the case?
Yes, it is.
OMG.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that the same for you then, AD?
Never really thought about it, but I guess so, yeah.
Nathan Jones, maybe.
Possibly Nathan Jones and possibly...
Actually, Garcia
is
younger than you. You're quite right. Oscar Garcia is, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, we did create some chances in the game, but we didn't take them. And the biggest culprit on this one was Leandro Trossard, who had two clear-cut opportunities. And one was a great save and one he completely, utterly fluffed his line.
But the mere fact that we were actually creating something like that against Manchester City, and let's face it, not many clubs can do that.
Well, I mean, Pep afterwards was he was... very very, very... he praised the way that we played in that game. He said, I like it when teams come here and actually try and play football, which is either very stupid or
well, if you're going to lose 4-0, then go down fighting. I think that seems to be Potter's philosophy. Do not sort of like... You know, what's the point of going into a game of just hoping that there's going to be a 0-0 at the end of it? You know, hopefully he gives Chelsea... It goes out go against Chelsea. Gives go. We've got Spurs and Chelsea before the end of the month. And let's hope he can give that go against them as well.
But I mean, obviously the goal of the game was Aguero's second, which is just came from nothing. Lewis Dunk probably didn't have a game to forget. He had, I think, he just needed to change his boots more than anything. He seemed to keep on stumbling at the key points in this game. But
he's not, they're all sort of capable of doing that now.
But I think the one thing that we will take from it, I mean, obviously we lost 4-0, so there's not much you can take from it. But the fact is that Aaron Connolly made his Premier League debut.
Well, I think there's actually more you can take from it than that. I mean, Connolly is a good example. But you've also got to realise the way that we can set up, how possible works against the big sides. Yeah, don't get me wrong, as Jason said, the scoreline is going to be fairly standard. But we gave it a go, and but for better finishing, you know, we could have given a little bit of scare. But what you've got to see is that, because we've only seen possible against some of the other 13. Now we're seeing against one of the top six, and it's not as horrific as we feared it might be.
But Jason, there is certainly like cause for optimism.
I did huge optimism. I'm massively optimistic. My mojo is still very high.
Okay. Another team that is very, very optimistic is that of the Albion women's team. And they kick off their season against Bristol City today at Ashton Gate. And earlier on today, myself and Alan caught up with the women's team's assistant manager, Amy Merricks.
Hello.
It's a long time no speak.
I know, it's been a while. Thank you for having me back.
Not at all. I think the last time you were on, I can't remember, see if you can remember this. Had the Albion women's team just been promoted via the playoffs with West Brom, were you in before or after that?
That was afterwards. I think we were in prep for our first appearance, I think, in Super League, potentially. Mm-hmm. Or maybe
it was that weird league in the hinterland, I think.
Spring Series, yeah.
That's it, yeah.
It was, yeah.
Because I mean, that was a very strange setup, because obviously, I mean, you basically had a season off, really, because of that, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a long time off. So after the playoff final, there was quite a few months. It was probably the longest off season and pre-season I've ever done.
But 18 months, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long time.
But Amy, here we are on the eve of the new season in the Women's Super League. And this feels like the biggest one yet, really, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. We've now got 1 year under our belts in the Professional Super League and as professional, you know, the full squad. And that's playing staff full time, so it feels different feeling this time round, but an exciting feeling.
I mean, tell us about sort of, because when I interviewed Hope Powell at the beginning of last season, her one sort of main ambition was to make sure that the Albion women's team were going to have a second season in the Super League. So, with that in mind, talk us through that particular season and the targets you set and how you feel you've achieved them.
I think last season it was really important for us to get to a point where we learnt from the experience of playing the teams that would put us in good stead for this year. I think our absolute priority was to make sure we didn't get relegated and we stayed playing at the highest level, which we managed to do. And I think we went a little bit further than that because we finished higher than Everton as well, which probably some people didn't expect. So I think we punched above what we were hoping for. And not only that, I thought the second half of the season, we went on a really good run. And I think teams like Chelsea, when they played us, were even saying that we were hard to beat, which is what we wanted to do. So I think last season for us, you know, looking back at it, we probably did a little bit better than what we would have wanted to. And, you know, there were times when we got results and we thought we should have done better there. But I think we made up for it in some patches as well.
But I mean, the side's constantly evolving, and we've lost a few players over the summer and brought in a few more as well. And obviously, we've lost Laura Rafferty to injury for the season, which that's a massive loss, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate for Laura because she just came back from injury late last season, and you know, it's one of those things. It's obviously going to be a big test for her, but I think she's been very mature. She's sticking to her plan. She's focused on her recovery. So it's a different experience being injured, and it's something that will help mould her for the future as well. But she's definitely taking it in her stride at the moment.
And the thing is with Raf is that she's such a role model as well for the whole club, not just for the women's team, but for the whole of Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yeah, she's a great character. She's a great role model. She's a great person to have around the team. And I know she wants to be here and around for the team as much as she can still, even though she's injured. So it's just that's credit to her character, her personality. And she's very good at, even though she's injured and, you know, can't be involved in training, she'll constantly be talking to defenders and helping out where she can. She's helped embed the new players as much as she can. So she's, you know, she's still been valuable for us. Even though players that are injured can't play, they're still valuable for us. And her experience of being at the club and knowing what we want as staff, she passes that on really well still. So, yeah, she's been great.
I do remember a tweet from, I think, a mother sometime during the season, last season. She tweeted something along the lines of the fact that her seven-year-old daughter got high-fived by Laura Rafferty after a game and went into class the next day totally full of beans, saying, "I got high-fived," and wouldn't shut up about it. And I had to respond saying, "Listen, Laura Rafferty accidentally high-fived me and I got just as excited. So I know what a role model she can be." So, yeah.
Okay, now, Amy, obviously, we're coming into this season, we're coming in on the back of a very, very successful World Cup. And, I mean, has there been any knock-on effects of that for yourselves?
I think just the interest has grown massively. I think certainly when you go to places and you're in your kit after work, or, you know, you just meet family somewhere, and I now get numerous members of the public really engaging with me about women's football, not just people that are avid fans and go to the games all the time, but these people that haven't been to a game and actually have watched all the Women's World Cup games. So I think the fact that it's a common thing to discuss now is great. I think also the fact that people like the Telegraph really invest in, the BBC are doing even more now. It's just going to give us more and more exposure. So our game tomorrow is, you can watch it live anywhere in the world. Never happened before.
I was going to ask you about that, because the decision by the BBC to actually show all of the England women's games live on mainstream television at peak times, particularly during the World Cup. I mean, that's made the girls in that particular team household names, and it's had a knock-on effect, particularly with season ticket sales for yourselves.
I was about to say, they've been increased fivefold, haven't they, this season? So, you know, and as I understand it, the Albion women's team are live on the box against Arsenal again soon, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the BBC, I think they deserve more credit than what they've got in the growth of the women's game. They did it last World Cup, but even more so this year, every single game is incredible. Mm. Absolutely incredible. And it's just growing and growing. It's growing. Do you know what? It's quite scary, but it's exciting. And it's what we've been waiting for. And now we're so much in the public eye. It's even, you know, even more important that we create even better role models, and we prove even more people that the women's game can be just as entertaining as the men's game.
Absolutely. Now, I know that American Express have made a commitment to the Albion, and specifically to the Albion women's team. Now, I appreciate this might be a question more for Michelle Warder, who's the board member that, as I understand it, oversees the women's team at the Amex. But, you know, with the money that's coming in, and we're not 100% sure on the outside of it what that money is, do you know what's the funding for the development of the women's game at the Albion, where it's going to go?
Yeah, I think in the first instance, we've got a new training ground being built as well, which is going to help to develop. And that's where the main investment's going first. So
this is an extension at Lancing, isn't it?
Yep. So the facilities, that's going to play a huge part, because, I mean, we're so lucky at the moment. We're at the Amex. We have our own gym. The facilities are great. We just need to be back in and around the training environment with the men's first team and the rest of the teams. And it means we're all under one roof then. And so to make sure that we have the flexibility to train as a full-time team, they're not only just making room for us there, they're building our own facility, which is just incredible. So a lot of the investment from the American Express will help with that. And just in general, increasing what we have already in the pathway, making sure that not only is it going back to the teams and sustaining a full-time environment, but we can have the backing of the support staff that we need to push the team forwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously that facility is great, but the fact you're playing the home games in Crawley still is still a bit of
so irritating.
It's a bone of contention with a lot of people. I mean, is there plans to? Well, I mean, we'll talk about the opening weekend in a minute, but I mean, is there plans to have more games actually in the local area? Is there plans to develop a stadium in the Brighton area for yourselves?
I think it's definitely something that's, you know, on Paul Barber's minds and Tony Bloom's minds. I think they definitely want the women's team to be as close to Brighton as possible. It's home, isn't it?
I think in Surrey at the moment.
Something that obviously they will look at soon and try and see if they can make it work somehow or another. At the moment, Crawley really look after us. We know it's not ideal, but I think the clubs really try to cater as much as they can to get fans there. And I think if fans don't know already, there's a free bus service that goes
there
on
is,
for them.
There is.
And they try and help as much as they can. It's just where we're at the moment. We have to meet certain requirements to get the best pitch possible and the best stadium possible to play with.
Absolutely.
And we have to meet license requirements with that. And unfortunately, the closest we can get at the moment is Crawley. But and I know it's something that's on Paul Barber's mind. He spoke to us recently about it as well. So, you know, hopefully soon there may be plans in place, but I'm not sure just yet.
Okay. Well, I mentioned that it's a big opening weekend this weekend, and we've got there's the Manchester Derby attracting over 20,000 people to the Etihad this weekend, and Chelsea v Spurs as well. They're expecting over 20,000 as well. We had the women's England friendly at the Amex, who was over 20,000 for that.
You can't say there's no interest, can you?
Yeah, and you're again, you're playing Ashton Gate tomorrow. I mean, you know where I'm going with this, don't you? is there plans for you to play at the Amex again this season?
I think the club will try and make it work and happen where they can. I think there's probably discussions in place at the moment. We've done it for the past three seasons, in fact.
Mm-hmm. And it's attracted massive crowds
now
as well. The biggest WSL crowds. I mean, obviously,
well, that's going to be beaten this season.
Yeah, we still have that record at the moment, maybe for a few more hours. Until the Man City derby. But, I mean, look, I can't believe that it's 2019. We're talking about over 20,000 fans going to not just one women's game in the country, but two, you know, in one weekend. Isn't that just crazy?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the club wants to cater for us as much as possible to be in the biggest stage possible.
Yeah.
But obviously the logistics, it has to fit as best as it can around the men's team as well.
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention that.
And
actually,
I know they will if there's the opportunity this year, and I'm sure there may possibly be an opportunity. I think Michelle Walder spoke about committing to it if they can as well. So, I mean, we've done it last three seasons. So hopefully we will be back there, and I would hope that we'd get another great crowd there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, there has been talk, and I mean, I know this is all very much pie in the sky stuff at the moment, and it's all theory at the moment, but there has been talk of the possibility of maybe having double headers with the men's team either before or after.
Is that something you just thought of?
No, it's been mentioned in dispatches across all the media, actually.
Okay.
I mean, do you think that is something that would work? I mean, a lot of people think it's a load of rubbish. A lot of people are very much for the idea. I personally think it's great, but
it's practicality.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of arguments for it. I'm actually against it, and I'll explain why. I think if you work in the industry and you're around match days, it's a logistical nightmare, to be quite honest. I mean, majority of our fans are families. We obviously have other fans, but majority of the fan base is based around families and children, and I can't imagine those fans going to a men's game for a kickoff at, you know, let's say 2 p.m. and then those young children and families waiting for an extra 3 hours after that game for us to be able to get in, set up the changing rooms, warm up and then kick off. So unless there's another facility close by that can support that transition so it's quick and smooth, I'm not sure whether it will work logistically.
No,
and you
point.
Know,
yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
We've got to think about not just the fans having to wait around, but we've also got to think about the transition of the television people coming in and out. The traffic coming in and out, the changing rooms, you know, the guys have got to get out of the changing rooms, then the changing rooms got to be turned around again. So if kickoff's at 2 p.m. for the men, what time would we kick off?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly.
So
I think that idea has been torpedoed beautifully, Amy.
Yeah,
it's rubbish.
I mean, unless they did the men's team on a Saturday, the women's team on a Sunday, but the same day, I'm not sure it will work for us or, you know.
I think maybe another stadium that is more central.
But we haven't got another stadium.
No, not necessarily. I'm not talking about us. I mean, this has been mentioned, about Brighton, about other teams.
To be honest, I think also a lot of people just don't go to two games in one day. They might sit and watch something on the telly. Mm. We don't have the culture of doing that. We go and support our team. And Amy's point about, you know, the logistics. If you had a place that had six sets of changing rooms, then maybe. But, you know, the whole...
Or stadiums side by side, you know, Alan. If we had two stadiums side by side, people could just walk across, that'd be incredible, wouldn't it? I think then it would work.
Absolutely. We can't even find a stadium close to us, let alone next door to us. So I think as a notion, certainly at the Albion, and it has to work across all clubs nationwide, as at the Albion, it's a no-no. Okay. So let's look forward to this season then, Amy. Like I said, when I interviewed Hope last season, the first and foremost idea was to stay in the Premier League and to have a second season. We've got that. What are the targets and ambitions for this season?
You know, it's quite an interesting conversation. Obviously, we have lots of discussions as staff, and we obviously have in our minds where we would like to be. And we certainly want to do better than what we did last season. But we try to chuck it over to the players as well. So we've had lots of discussions with the players. The players have had meetings with themselves to try and set a target that they want to strive for. So they have a target in mind. We definitely want to better what we did. And, you know, we've got to start climbing the table and we've got to start turning those draws into wins and those near chances into goals.
There wasn't enough goals last year. That's one of the main problems.
So we need to climb and we need to be more clinical and we're aware of that. So we certainly want to be looking up, not down.
Let's talk about some of the players that have come in. So we've had Lila Garek come in, Megan Walsh, Matilda Skusen, and Danique Kurdik.
I do love your foreign pronunciations, Aidy. They are
I've
textbooks.
Seen the shirt of the week.
Now,
mate,
could you pronounce them properly for us, please, Amy?
Yeah, we've got Danique Kirkdyke, Megan Walsh, Matilda Lundor.
Say that again, Amy. Aidy talks over the top of you.
That's okay. Matilda Lundor. She goes by. She'll have on the back of her shirt. And Leah Legarac.
Okay, not too bad. So tell us about those women that have been brought in.
Okay, so firstly, I'll start from the back. So goalkeeper Megan Walsh, probably saw her for Yeovil last season, had the highest percentage of shots stopped in the league.
She had to,
but I tell you what, if you watch the saves, and these are against teams like City and Arsenal, and you always, you know, Yeovil always hard to score against, fantastic goalkeeper, so great addition for us, and has huge potential. Danique Kirkdyke, centre-back from Bristol City, superb player, she's in possession of the ball, she's comfortable, wants to play, wants to be on the ball. Matilda Lundorf at right back, probably someone that's very much unheard of, but really exciting prospect and still so young.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people will be excited about her. And Leah Legarac, which was our latest signing, more of an attacking midfield player, comes with a lot of experience. She's played a few French international caps. I think she's got four. And again, we're hoping that she'll be able to provide a little bit more for us going forwards.
Okay, so where are the goals going to come from this year? Well, obviously, we've got Ellie Brazil. I mean, Danny Buick weighed in with a few from midfield last year. Obviously, we've got Innie coming in there as well. So, I mean, is there any more
firepower to be added?
I think the additions are going to help us be able to play through and create more chances. So I think the additions that we've added are going to bring more value to the team and create more chances that are easier to finish. And I think with the pace of, you know, you've still got Ellie, Kaylee, the runs in behind, Innie's power and strength, Leah being able to find that pass for us, and she loves to finish as well. So I think, you know, and it's Aileen as well, who got herself on the score sheet as well last year.
It's Aileen Whelan, isn't it, of course?
I think what it is as well with the finishing and being clinical is having a belief. And I think if you look at the second half of last season, after playing everyone once, each team once, the team suddenly realised that actually, yeah, we can play, we can score against these teams, and you saw that in our results the second half. So they've definitely got more confidence and belief going into this season.
Great stuff. Okay, okay, listen, so, we've got to wrap it up there.
So,
but
Bristol City is today.
Yes,
and
good luck with that.
And next week,
3 PM, yeah.
And next week, Chelsea at Crawley. That's on Sunday, 2 o'clock kickoff, I believe.
Yes.
Okay, tickets are available. Yeah. Season tickets are available. Yeah. Get you, so basically,
I can't
just get yourself down
to Chelsea. We're going to outnumber us unless we really all get up there. So.
Please come and watch.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much, Amy Merricks. That, of course, was Amy Merricks, who's no stranger to us here at Raw Towers, and hopefully we'll hear from her later on throughout the season. But, of course, this is the Albion Raw, and we are, of course, brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, and on DAB, and on our podcast, which you can now find on Spotify. Now, I'm not quite sure how to describe this one, so I'm going to give it to Jason to have a look at.
So basically, we're talking about here is that Phil will always give us a shirt of the week that it works brilliantly on radio, that we can see what's going on here for those of us that have super reverb vision. And Adi has just passed a picture of Phil's shirt of the week, which is one of the 100,000 plus shirts that are on the website. And Jason, describe this little beauty.
Well, this little beauty, it's black on top, and well, it's three-coloured, really, it seems to be.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's weird.
Like a caramel
mini. It's got more sponsors than a Formula One car. I'm going to hazard a guess that it's from Mexico, because I've read one of the sponsors.
Yeah, so he always gives us Mexican shirts, doesn't he?
Is it Mexican?
It is Mexican. Oh,
hurrah.
Another one from Mexico. Phil, come on, there are other countries in the world other than Mexico. You can give us more if you wish. Apart from that, I mean, this is going to be some 14th division side that's been taken over by some tin pot dictator who lives up in the hills.
It vaguely looks like a cycling shirt, actually. I'm going to call it a cycling shirt.
Not a clue. It's from Mexico. That's enough.
It is from Mexico. And this is your shirt of the week. Actually, compared to last week's, which was an absolute doozy, wasn't it? It was wonderful.
The beer one, yes, yeah. with the shark. Yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic.
That was a good one.
Great.
Right? Yeah.
But this is your shirt of the week for this week, and it's a 2018 to 2019 home shirt of Mexican side Dorados de Sinaloa. Actually, I'm surprised that's that current. It looks a lot older than that.
I was going to say it was old.
Yeah.
And they play in the Mexican Ascenso MX League, which is their equivalent of the championship. The team goes by the nickname of El Gran Pez, and they play at the Estadio Bonarte Culiacan, which is with seating for 20,108 tamale munching Sinaloans.
Did you say Dorados is the team's called?
Dorados, yeah.
Yeah, because that's a Dorado fish on the mammal, sea mammal, which I think is kind of like a dolphin, like a. I think it's got a it's a fish, and not many teams have a fish apart from maybe Worthing have a fish on their badge.
We must have done in the '70s though, mustn't we?
I think we might have had a dolphin once upon a time.
Dolphin,
I mean,
a dolphin's not a fish really.
Not really. I mean, you know, Worthing have three mackerels for crying out loud.
Do they?
Yeah,
they do. Fantastic.
Mackerel men.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, this is, as it happens, this is the shirt which the team wore for the one season that they were managed by none other than Diego Armando Maradona. And ironically, the shirt is made by a company called Charlie.
It all makes sense now, because it looks like it's been designed by Maradona on a night out.
Yes.
the team was only formed in 2003, and in 2004 they won their first promotion to the top flight. Since then, they've been relegated and promoted and then relegated again, and they regard Club León as their rivals, having played them four times in promotion playoff finals, winning two and losing two.
I was about to say, how does a team that's only 15 years old actually already get a rival?
No idea.
No, okay.
But the most notable former player at Dorados was, in fact, our adversary last weekend, Pep Guardiola. Who finished his playing career with 10 appearances for the side in 2005 to 2006. In the 16 years of existence, they've had 24 different managers. Maradona being the second and most recent at the time of writing. He managed the side for the entire season, just failing to clinch promotion, losing 2-1 in the playoff final, after which he stepped down, citing health issues. Yeah, right.
Well, they were going to kill him.
The region of Sinaloa and the city of Culiacan in the north is in the north of northwestern Mexico, and it seems to be the most famous for accommodating drug lords. There you go. And the Sinaloa cartel is reported to be being the largest drug trafficking, money laundering, and organized crime syndicates in all of the Americas.
So again, the shirt makes a lot more sense when
yes.
you know that.
I was joking when I said it's run by some tin pot dictating drug lord, but. Thanks for that, Phil. Did you write that, or did he?
No, he wrote that, yeah.
Where's the Albion link, by the way?
No Albion link this week. Pep Guardiola, we played last week.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. I'm not sure if I'm any the wiser, but...
it was definitely...
That was read out like it was. We were on Jack and Ori, so thank you for that.
I know. Okay, how do you solve a problem like fluorine?
Take his legs
off?
So,
I think we're all shocked by the news he was allowed to go.
Well, I think we're more shocked by the tackle, weren't we?
No, I was more shocked by the news.
I'm still maintaining. I mean, that tackle looked a lot worse than it actually was.
That's because it was horrible.
It wasn't a great tackle, but I can't... I think it actually looked a lot worse than it actually
where
was.
Where is the ball in comparison to where he wants... Where when, he's running
he was,
his leg?
He was trying to turn, put his body between the man and the ball, and his
he
foot went into the
He forgot about
player.
The ball completely.
I mean, the fact he ended up sitting on him is neither here nor there, but it's like... It was
I cannot buy that. I'll tell you what, if that goes to trial, I guess he would want separate lawyers. There is no way you can defend that.
I'm not defending it per se, but I'm just saying it looked a lot worse than it actually was. And I can see what he was actually trying to do, and I don't think he was actually deliberately trying to injure the player, but...
It was a horrible tackle and a straight red all day long.
Absolutely, and he'd been
I'm not disagreeing with that.
And
I'm
he was doing that all day long. Each
do.
Time he was actually playing the man. So, so his card is marked, and bearing in mind he'd been doing that last season as well.
Yeah.
You're still shocked that he's gone.
I was shocked when I saw the rumour that he was going on Twitter and on North Sound Chat and what have you. It seemed reasonably solid rumour sort of halfway through the day, and you know, it was confirmed by the likes of Brian Owen, etc. So it was going to happen, and I was thinking, really, you know, is this...
How do you feel about it?
How do I feel about it? I feel differently about it now to probably how I felt. Initially, I felt this is going to leave us ridiculously thin up top. It's a massive risk.
And you two can talk about that quite handsomely. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. having had some time to digest it, there are two things that strike me. First of all, I think he appears to have been about as popular as Boris Johnson in the Brussels wine bar.
Okay.
Confirmed by Paul... Did you see Paul Hayward's tweet?
He...
Leaving due in a phone box.
Yes.
So that would suggest
which may
he wasn't
or may
the
not
most
be true.
Popular
we don't know,
member.
Yeah. Okay.
No, we don't, but it's Paul Hayward. It's not some bloke off the street.
Absolutely, there is that. Okay. And your second point?
And the second point is, I think a lot of people said when one of the reasons we need to get rid of Houghton is he's far too cautious and he'll never play any of the under-23s. And this is now... thrust Aaron Connolly into the spotlight.
Yes,
and
you've got
to say at some point, if he's ready, give him a go. You know, sink or swim. Is he the new Shamir Fenlon, or is he the new Alexander Arnold, or Kane was given his head quite
Do you think
early
it
on.
Actually puts a lot of pressure on his shoulders though?
Yes, it does.
But then if
he wants to play at that division, he wants to play at that level, that's the nature of what he's got to do. It's the same pressure on Glenn Murray's shoulders. They're all obliged to do their job.
Alan, we were talking in here a couple of years ago when we had John Morling in the studio, and we were talking about Aaron then, and he was, 16 then?
Something like that,
And we were saying then that he's ready now.
Well, you were. He wasn't.
Well, John was saying that if it wasn't for an injury, then he would have been...
He would have been training with the first team a lot more regularly, which is different from saying that he'd have been a first team regular or even a place on the bench. And given the Houghton's attitude to sort of promoting the kids from the under-23s, I think that the pathway was always going to be a lot more blocked. It seems to be evident that with Graham Potter, the pathway is that much more open. So if Potter had been here 2 years ago, there's a good chance that... I mean, to have a 16-year-old... All right, if you say you're good enough, you're old enough, okay, fine, I'll buy that. And the one who springs to mind most often that way is Jake Forster-Caskey. He broke into the team at 16 and did, for the most part, pretty well.
but hasn't made position quite a lot.
But hasn't made it as a player, you know, at that particular level anymore. So you've got the consideration that we have kind of plotted his thing, and we're kind of excited to see him. I think that the thing that's really helped him last season is the fact he was the Premier League 2 player of the season and the top scorer. So he could do it against a lot of sides, and we can clearly see that he can play against third division sides. That much we know, he is way above the third division level. That bit, that's fine, that's understood. Is he a Premier League player? Well, did he look out of place against Manchester City? He's not necessarily going to be a first team striker. However, now that the pathway's been cleared for him, because we've offloaded Lacazette, we've offloaded Knockaert, we've offloaded Andone, then his hurdles are actually, you know, look much lower now.
I suspect that Connolly would probably have had a debut goal if Grace had actually looked up and actually found and passed to him. But pots and pans, etc. But yeah, I mean, he is exciting, and we've got Elzati coming through as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, the fact that there is this pathway, and obviously we all know that Tony Bloom, of course, has spent so much money on getting us to this academy status, and the money that we're spending on the training ground. I mean, and you look at the players that we've just got out on loan at the moment. I mean, we mentioned this last week.
It's probably about now, given the money that's gone into it, and how hard that the pathway, and I keep using that word pathway, but they use it. It's about time it started coming to fruition. We're not going to be producing, like Southampton have, you know, a team that could put out as a Great Britain international side. We're not there yet. But the first ones are now beginning to bear fruit. And we've got a decent set of people out on loan, haven't we?
We have got these. You look at Ben White at Leeds. They love him there.
Absolutely.
Already.
He got the Championship Player of the Month.
Yeah, someone posted his highlights against Stoke. He was all over the place.
Sure. Well, as in a good thing.
As in a good thing. Yeah. As in he won every ball. His passing was amazing. Yeah. He just looked great.
Yeah, and Leeds are convinced they're going to get him at the end of the season. I'm thinking, well,
no
if he's
chance.
That good. You know,
no
absolutely. It's either that or they're going to pay silly money, because if they still think themselves a big side, then they're going to pay silly money for him.
Okay,
so.
Well, let's talk about the sides that we have got players out on loan, because I mean, this is a crucial thing at the moment, particularly with the two which I'm thinking of, which are players which we thought we've signed that we may never ever get to see, which is of course Percy Tau and Alexis McAllister. Now, things have happened in the last, well, particularly this week, which could really, really help in getting those work permits. In the fact that he's now playing for Bruges,
in the Champions League. But it's not about that, though.
But that helps in getting work permits.
Well, I think it's about internationals. And it's about how South Africa's status as an international side. That's what's hamstringing us. It's who he plays for internationally. So we're
playing in the Champions League actually helps as points towards getting this permit. And also, and with McAllister's point of view,
well, he's in a couple of Libertadores, isn't he?
But he's about to make his
against Rio Plate.
Made his debut. He came on as a substitute
for Argentina. So there you go.
So it'll help, but we've just got to be patient. There's nothing we can do about it.
But McAllister looks a player, though, doesn't he?
I haven't seen him. Do tell.
He's good.
What position does he play?
He's an attacking midfielder. He's better than anything we've got at the moment.
What?
Better than Trossard?
He doesn't play in that position. He's more
of
a Davy Proper type box. When proper
a box to box,
yeah, rather than the one that plays for us,
right?
So I mean, he's looking like a really good prospect. So I'm hoping that we'll get to see him at some point as well.
And you also have to bear in mind that the when you look on social media, the fervour that there is for Percy Tau, especially from South African fans, who are sort of like shouting no end of dogs abuse at the club for not allowing him to play for the club. You know, it kind of has an effect on others. You think, well, hang on, yeah, if he's really this good, why isn't it happening, blah, blah, blah. And there's rules. And, you know, it's great that, as we know, it's fine for one player to play well in Belgium. That doesn't necessarily translate he's going to play well in England. Obviously, he's good, and we want him over here. But how good? Who knows?
But then, again, another player which we saw quite a lot of last year, which was Gorkeres. I haven't actually seen how he's getting on at the moment. But, I mean, he's one that I thought that Potter would have retained.
Yet. Not quite. No, I mean, we saw him play against West Brom in the first game of the Cup and looked really good when he came on as a sub. and frankly show the others how to do it. Then he played in the replay, and I thought was a little bit lacking. Now, it's not fair to judge him just on those two games, but we've only ever seen him really play for the under-23s, and his limited time for the first team, you know, we can't really judge him on that. So, you know, it's... Yeah, he is still one for the future, and he may make the mark, but who knows?
I mean, it's all conjecture at this time, but I mean, it's exciting. The future for us is very, very exciting at the moment, but obviously... staying in this league is a massive thing for us, and we've got to continue doing that. Now we've got coming into the next set of fixtures from next week. Obviously, Burnley next Saturday, Newcastle away, and then Chelsea away. Looks like we're going to be without Leandro Trossard for those. He might possibly be back for the Chelsea game. We're not quite sure how bad this injury is, but he's picked up a groin.
Okay, so what's your point? Is that playing... who's going to be playing instead then? Okay, well, let's pick it. I mean, you've got Murray to choose from. You've got Izquierdo's probably not quite ready yet.
Not yet, no.
So you'll have Maupay, you'll have March, you'll have Connolly.
Yeah.
So you've got three from four to choose from.
Aaron Moy came on in that position as a late substitute against Southampton.
We have options.
That's we do have options.
And even someone like Pereba can be moved further forward.
Yes, I think he can. I think Bissouma, when he's ready, could play ready. As well.
He's back.
Well, I think it was Bissouma I was thinking of in terms of being ready for the end of the month, yeah.
I think Bissouma... Potter was saying that he'll be possibly ready for at least a cameo against Burnley, but if he's ready for a cameo against Burnley, then I suspect he might get more minutes against Aston Villa in the cup.
I would have thought so too.
But yeah, I mean, it's exciting. Also, El Galgo is back as well. Sciotto, the forgotten man.
He, for me, has a point to prove. He started off well, was okay, and then it's just that stinker against Palace. That pretty much did for him.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about the Greyhound, Potterball...
Yeah,
talked about Dan Byrne being a big winner from Potterball. Martin Montoya, what a winner from Potterball he is. I don't think he can be displaced at the moment.
He is okay going forward.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit clumsy in defence.
He is a little bit clumsy in defence, but he's largely being asked to go forward. I mean, you look at Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's clumsy in defence. He's still one of the best right-backs in the Premier League.
Yeah, but it's who's covering... who's covering Montoya that worries me. I mean, when the Greyhound gets off and running, you know, he's fantastic. But, you know, and when you've seen him, the way he's defended, and I do have to go back to that Palace game where, sorry to say, that Zaha stuck him in his pocket. I wouldn't say it was him and him alone that caused it, because that first half at Palace, you know, when we lost 3-2, that was absolutely mad. Both sides were appalling defensively. But when you've got Zaha, who is obviously a very good player, I know it sounds sacrilege to say that, against someone who wasn't actually doing his job that day, you're going to have trouble.
But Al, it's a complete blank canvas for all of these players.
I mean,
last season, I really did not rate Montoya at all. I thought,
Bruno came in.
He came with his big reputation. You know,
he played decently for a few games.
But he was, didn't really do anything.
But then lost his place to Bruno. Yeah, absolutely.
But now he's come... But yeah, there's a reason he lost his place because Bruno could organise the defence. But obviously, we're playing a different manner now. I mean, I think what I'm trying to say here is the fact it's all really, really exciting. We're still under Chris. We love Chris Hughton. We all know that, and we're forever grateful for his achievement. But we could pick the team. You knew who his favourites were, if you want, for want of a better phrase. But even though we're three games into the season.
It wasn't the personnel that was the issue.
Four games into the season. And we still got no idea. And these players, they're coming in. It's exciting for us. And it's going to be really, really good going forward. I think you're right. We're going to be very much like a Bournemouth side. We're going to win 5-4 or lose 5-0 or win 5-0. It's going to be...
But it's the point is, it's the same personnel as last year, but they're actually playing in positions that suit them a lot better. Each and every player is playing in one that you think, well, actually, this is what I was signed for, I thought.
Yes, agreed, yeah. I mean, it's not 100% the same because we've got more pay coming. I've been quite impressed with him. Watford, obviously, scoring that third goal when they were stretched at the back, but... I think there's a finisher in there as well in Morpé.
Yes.
We haven't seen it a lot yet, but we will.
He's had some chances, he's missed some chances, that's what all strikers do. But, I want to see some more from him, personally.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I will. I'm sure that time will come. What it does mean is that, obviously, with Andoni going, which is where this conversation started, believe it or not, it means that the oldest swinger in town is still going
to
be...
And we worked out, sorry, for the, I know we asked the question last week, he's got 14 to go to beat Tommy Cook, so
I suspect that's not going to be this season unless he plays in all the cup games against opposition.
Yeah, if he can get six against Barrow or something, or Workington for that matter,
that would be most apt,
wouldn't it? Just no, the point is we have options. Andoni's gone. By the way, have we actually worked out, as much as we were shocked, are we upset he's gone?
I think that's where I started off. I like Andone, I have to say.
When he's good, he's brilliant.
When he's good, he's brilliant. And the thing is, he scored probably my favourite goal of last season, which was the goal against Palace.
Yep.
He probably scored the goal at home to Huddersfield that kept us up.
Yep.
I don't think we'd have stayed up if we hadn't got 3 points that day.
I agree.
And he looked like he loved scoring goals, but...
He's
better when the ball's played ahead of him.
And he has just scored for Romania this week as well.
Oh, yeah. Is he? But when the ball's played up and he's got his back to goal...
Against Spain as well.
There's an irony. But when he's playing with his back to goal, even on the halfway line, and we saw it against Southampton, we saw it a lot of times last year, and he got a retrospective ban after the West Brom game, is that he far too often plays the man. He's trying to beat him up. And that tackle on the Southampton defender is kind of indicative. He's trying to shield himself so much he's actually gone too far and he's gone flying in, studs up, absolutely not necessary to do so. There is something there for him, for us to do, but if you're going to do that and put yourself down to 10 men in a position where we're not able to do that, we're not able to afford to do that, then, something has to give.
I mean, I like him. He plays with the devil on his shoulder. I mean, that's always going to be a risk of that. But, I mean, it's ironic he's gone to Galatasaray, whose colours are...
Red and yellow.
There you go. Yeah. So, but on that note, that's all we've got time for this week, amazingly. So thank you, of course, to Alan Ware. Thank you to Jason Thackeray. Thank you to Amy Merritt. I'm Aidy Packham, and we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. See you then. Cheers. Bye. Sometimes I feel so insecure, and love so distant and obscure remains the cure.
for fun. Those days are gone.